Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And today, of course, we have with us Dr. Lowenthal, and of course, he is a professor. He teaches a political science at Boston College. He's been doing it for many years. And of course, our telephone number out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We're going to be talking about Dr. Lowenthal's book, The Present Dangers, the Rediscovering the First Amendment. So, Dr. Lowenthal, thank you so much for being with us again.
Oh, it's a real pleasure, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, of course, you are talking about what does the First Amendment really say? And of course, why is this important? I mean, after all, isn't the First Amendment pretty definite in what it says? You know, we have freedom of speech and we have freedom of assembly and freedom of religion. And how could that be confusing, or is it confusing today?
Well, it's a lot more confusing than it need to be. The Supreme Court has done a job on it in the last 50 years, and they've given the words of the First Amendment an interpretation different from that which the framers intended and that which prevailed up to more or less 1950. And then with the onset of the so-called Warren Court, why, things began to change, and in every area of life, so that the consequences have really been drastic. Whether you're looking at the treatment of revolutionary groups or obscenity or church-state relations, these all come under one part or the other of the First Amendment, and they've all been really revolutionized by the Supreme Court's way of interpreting the Constitution.
Well, of course, but the First Amendment is pretty straightforward. In fact, you start your book with, of course, a recitation of the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition government for a redress of their grievances. Now, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And if you assume that what you have to do is to make sure that the meanings of those words are the same, were the same to the framers as they are today. And you must do a little research and a little thinking. And I wouldn't say much, but you must do some. And what has happened is this, that if you go with the Supreme Court's view of those words, well, you're led to a very different conclusion as to their meaning from that which you can, by just some historical research, determine was the meaning of the founders. I give you just one example. Freedom of speech and press. Why, when those words were used at that time, back in more or less 1787, 89, 91, but when they were used, what they meant to everybody using those terms was this, that you were free with certain conditions attached. It wasn't utter freedom. You could not, right from the beginning, encourage revolution with your words. You could not publish obscenity. You could not slander or libel people. You could not call for the violation of law.
Well, now, I'm going to have to interrupt you here, because we're going to have to go to our first break. We have to bring on several stations onto our network. So there's going to be just a little moment here when we bring in stations, and then another one in 3 minutes, and then we'll be able to carry out our conversation without too many interruptions. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is Dr. David Lowenthal, and he is a professor of political science at Boston College, where he's taught for many years. We're talking about his book, The Present Danger. And, of course, the major issue is the First Amendment. And, of course, the First Amendment really is very clear. I mean, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And of course, if you read the First Amendment, there's little question what it says. But then, of course, we came along, and of course, initially, it was a restriction placed on Congress, not the states. In fact, initially, didn't the states have the right to limit these things so that we would not have the pornography and revolution? Couldn't the states say, you can't advocate revolution? Wasn't that the way it started out?
Yes. You see, the general logic for having a First Amendment at all, for having a Bill of Rights at all, was relatively simple. As the new Constitution, the one formed by the founders in 1787 in Philadelphia, as that new Constitution made the rounds from state to state in order to be ratified, the people of these states, or the legislatures of these states, and the people through the legislatures of the states, actually said, look, we need some protections against this new, very formidable national government, this federal government, the protections of the same sort that we had in our own states. In our own states, it was understood that they had freedom of speech, press, and so on, and with all the limitations on those very things that went along with them. What they had in mind was, look, we don't want Congress, this new and very powerful Congress that they had no experience of whatsoever, we don't want it trampling on our rights. We want it to stay off certain things, and we want to be sure that it's going to stay off these things. And we want it written up in the Constitution. Now, the people like James Madison, and Madison was the one who proposed the Bill of Rights, including the First Amendment, but in quite a different form. But he was the one who got up in the House of Representatives and said, look, we're going to have to amend the Constitution. And for the first time, and very quickly, the new Constitution was amended. And what he thought to himself was very plain. This is not changing the Constitution essentially. What it is building a protection for the people of the states against abuse, tyrannical abuse by this new Congress.
All right, we're going to have to just interrupt you there. And, of course, it was really a fear of tyranny by the central authority. It was the fear of this federal government that motivated the foundation of the First Amendment. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is David Lowenthal, and of course we're talking about his book, The Present Danger. And Professor Lowenthal is a professor of teaches political science at Boston University College. He's been there for many, many years. But he is concerned, as I think many of the people in the listening audience are, about how the meaning of the First Amendment has been twisted and altered. And it was originally passed by Congress back in 1791, somewhere in there, as the First Amendment, the first 10 amendments, which were our Bill of Rights. And its purpose was to restrict the power of the central authority. It said Congress shall make no law. It didn't say the states, didn't say the local city, because certainly at the local level, if there was pornography, obscenity, revolutionary agitation, why, we could take care of this at the local level. Once, of course, you gave all power to the central government, then, of course, that power could be misused, and our founding fathers recognized, as Lord Acton had said, that power corrupts, and absolutely power corrupts absolutely. And as the WAG added, absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone, and I think we see that today in Washington, D.C. So how did they get from where it was, where it said Congress should not make so law, to say that the states can't make a law and the local community can't make a law, and how did they twist the meaning of words to change the meaning of the First Amendment?
Well, that's going to be quite a mouthful, but I'll try to make it real brief, Dr. Stan. Here's what happened. In the course of the 20th century, and starting more or less around 1940 or so, the Supreme Court took a look at the 14th Amendment, the amendment that had been passed one of the three post-Civil War amendments immediately after the Civil War. They took a look at that, and they started to read into it the liberties, or some of the liberties, some of the guaranteed liberties of the First Amendment. And the 14th Amendment actually speaks about what the states can't do. See, what the states can't do. And now, reading into that, the states can't do the things of the First Amendment. The states can't make a law, prohibiting the free exercise of religion. No, the states can't abridge the freedom of speech and press.
But so
the states were then that's called incorporation, but the First Amendment became incorporated into the 14th. Therefore, the First Amendment started to read as if it said, neither Congress nor the states shall do so-and-so.
But was this ever debated? Was this what the people who founded, who passed the 14th Amendment intended? Or was this simply a clever and diabolical reinterpretation because they had an agenda? Was this ever mentioned at all, this whole concept, when the 14th Amendment was being debated?
Well, no. Well, the claim is that it was mentioned by two of the leaders who are bringing the 14th Amendment about. But if you look more carefully into the thing, you can see, and I think most scholars will agree, that the case is really very weak. The case that two of the leaders of Congress at that time really had that in mind. And so, for many years, after all, that went from 1867 all the way up through, depending on what part of the First Amendment you're looking at, incorporation occurred either in something like 1926 or in 1940, depending again on whether you're looking at this or that part of the First Amendment. So for a long, long time, it was taken for granted that the 14th Amendment was only a restriction on the states that did not include the Bill of Rights themselves. And you see, the word liberty, there's a passage in the 14th Amendment which says that no person shall be deprived, or the state shall deprive no person of life, liberty or property without due process of law. And the word liberty needed interpretation. Well, the Supreme Court broadened, instead of looking historically at what the ones who passed the 14th Amendment had in mind, they felt themselves free to give that word liberty the broadest possible interpretation, and therefore included under the heading of the word liberty the liberties, essentially, or the rights of the First Amendment.
All right, fine.
That's how it happened.
And so, basically, it really wasn't based in law or tradition. It was in the will of the men in the Supreme Court who had an agenda and really set out then to change the very structure of the First Amendment. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, I think it would be fair if one understands what one means by having an agenda. This is what happened, and we can understand it. The intellectual climate of the country changed from 1790-91 all the way up through the 20th century. And the whole idea of natural rights, of absolutes, of the things on which our country was founded and that our framers believed in, those ideas had been poo-pooed for a long time. They had been attacked by philosophy and by science and by a lot of things. So that by the time you get to the Supreme Court, in the middle of the 20th century, the minds of the justices have changed. You see, it wasn't a voluntary thing with them, but their own minds. They say to themselves, well, liberty isn't simply what the framers meant. We're going to have a more advanced and a fuller and more comprehensive and a better notion of what liberty is than they had. And then, you see, if you mean by having an agenda something like that, they thought that their views were superior to those of the framers, and therefore, when they saw a word like liberty, a very broad word, they gave it their own understanding without and feeling, if they sensed a difference from the framers, that theirs was better. You know, theirs was a superior view.
Well, of course, really, you mentioned natural law. don't those ideas go back to John Locke, who believed that our freedoms came from a supreme being, and that's where our liberty came from? It wasn't something that was inherent within us?
Well, I think absolutely. And the Declaration of Independence, essentially, Dr. Stan, the Declaration is our founding document in the broadest sense of the word. It's even more important in that sense than the Constitution. It lays out the philosophy of government that we still believe in. And in the Declaration, the fundamental views of John Locke are restated. There's a creator. There are four mentions of God. It's from God that we get that we are endowed with certain rights, and among them life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. This doesn't come from the process of evolution. It doesn't come from a material, simply a material set of causes working on each other. These things come from a higher source, and that is the prime reason why they have to be cherished and held on to.
And, of course, there in the this idea of nature's God and nature's law, where Lockean view is the idea that we were entitled to life, liberty, and property, or life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, as it was reinterpreted in the Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and property were really came right out of those. That phrase came right out of Locke, didn't it?
It absolutely came right out of the Second Treatise on government or on civil government. And Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration, was a profound student of John Locke's. We have some of Jefferson's notebooks where he actually transcribes practically line for line Locke's letter on toleration. It was John Locke who actually began this notion of separating religion and government. Jefferson was a very assiduous student of John Locke, but that's true of the entire founding generation. And of course, the justices in the 20th century looked down on John Locke as being old-fashioned, as believing in certain absolutes which were untrue, and they were off in a different direction. They were big believers in evolution and in historical development and a lot of other things that really led to their mental undoing, because that caused them to expand the whole notion of individual liberty way beyond what the framers had in mind.
Well, what's wrong, though, with just everybody being able to do whatever they want to do? Wouldn't that be an ideal society where everybody was really free, or would it?
Well, yeah, of course, as soon as one thinks even a bit of that, human beings, being the kinds of things they are not perfect beings. And because they have a good deal of selfishness in them, why, they will start swinging at each other at a certain point. And John Locke recognized that. Government is necessary. It's not just a convenience. It's an absolute necessity. We're going to see that in being worked out in Iraq, incidentally, Dr. Stan. We're going to, all these promises of leaving Iraq very, very soon and very quickly are probably very mistaken. We probably ought to say the opposite, that we're going to be staying there as long as is necessary for them to develop a civilized and free government.
Well, we really saw an example of total freedom when, of course, the police were gone and the military structure of Iraq was gone, and you saw looting and everything else going on. That is total freedom, doing whatever you want to do.
That's exactly right. And in our own history and in our own movies, best example is, the West, the open frontier. There's no sheriff, or the sheriff is too weak. And, High Noon would be a nice example of that. It's just a constant theme in our movies where we've realized that without a central authority which has sufficient strength, why, we're just going, it's going to be anarchy. We're just going to be all fighting with each other.
Well, really, freedom is the ability to do what you should do, not what you want to do. And that, of course, really what the definition of freedom to me is, because there is a moral authority, and we have to go along with what that moral authority says. And you remove that moral authority, you end up with, of course, with moral anarchy. And, of course, we saw that in Iraq. We see this increasingly in America. We're going to be back here in just a few moments here at Radio Liberty. very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today. This is Dr. Stan here, and I just want to mention that if you feel run down, if you feel that you need more energy, have you ever considered taking Be Alive Royal Jelly? Now, I've taken this for about 10 years on my own and along with my family. We've been very, very satisfied with it, and recently the Be Alive people approached us and asked if we'd like to have them sponsor us for a month. So we certainly agreed to that because we think it's a great product, and I think you will too. Let me suggest that you call 1-866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. The product is sold with a money-back guarantee. So give them a call at 1-866-233-7500 and simply ask to learn more about Be Alive Royal Jelly. I think that you'll be very, very satisfied with this product. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that if we were to have some serious problems in America, have you ever stopped and thought how you'd be sure that you'd have safe drinking water? Well, one of the things that the missionaries have used for many, many years is something we call a Big Berkey, and it's simply a stainless steel water filter system. Filters 2.5 gallons of water from an upper chamber through ceramic filters into a lower chamber, and they're available here in the United States. They, of course, work very efficiently. They filter out the bacteria and the cryptosporidium and many, many of the chemicals, and they ordinary are $279. They're available through Radio Liberty for $239 plus shipping. And, of course, if you buy this through us, we'll give you either a video or a 4-tape set that we produce. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for the Big Berkey water filter. Now, you can go up to our website, radioliberty.com. You can see the pictures of them. I have to tell you, however, the Big Berkey is not available in either California or Iowa. However, here in California, we have the Berkey Light, and the Berkey Light is a clear plastic. They're very, very tough. You can actually look right through, and you can see the water levels, which is an advantage. And then it has something called the Black Berkey filters, which are, they purify the water much more thoroughly than the ceramic ones. Just about nothing gets through there. There are one or two chemicals that do get through, but most of them are not getting through. And the Berkey Light, you can get it with lights, it's an extra $60. But if you get it without light, which is what we have, they're $199 plus shipping. And once again, you'll get a 4-tape set or a video that we produce. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. The Berkey Light is available in every state except for Iowa, so call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Dr. Lowenthal, Professor Lowenthal from Boston City College. And I wish that I'd had somebody when I was going to college who understood these issues and the relationship, between morality and the First Amendment and individual liberty. For as John Adams has said, our system of government was made for a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other, and you have to have moral people, and you can have a limited form of government, or you have immoral people, and you're going to have a military dictatorship. And tragically, we seem to be moving away from individual freedom. And one of the big problems, of course, is this moral anarchy that is becoming more prevalent. And the fact that, of course, the First Amendment is giving people the right to do all sorts of things as a way of pornography and obscenity, that, of course, is undermining our society. You make that point very well in your book.
Mm-hmm. Well, the area that I'm concerned about over the long haul, most of all, Dr. Stan, is what's happening in, well, generally what we call obscenity, and which today has really overflowed into the worst form of obscenity, which is pornography. And we have a real paradox here. The paradox is this. The Supreme Court has never, never said that pornography is protected by the First Amendment. As a matter of fact, back in 1973, when it last made a very large pronouncement on this subject of obscenity. But at that time, the only thing it reduced the very definition, the legal definition of obscenity, to pornography itself, and it remained unconstitutional. It remained unprotected by the First Amendment, so that the states were free, and even the federal government, in the mails and in imports, The First Amendment did not keep the federal government or the states from clamping down on pornography. And yet, and here's the paradox, we now have a flourishing pornographic industry in our country, and we find it everywhere. We find it on the Internet. We find it on ordinary cable television, and it's flooding the country.
And, of course, it's having a profound moral impact on the minds of our youth and our families, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. And again, what it does is to reduce, it reduces the love relationship to brute sex. But I do mean brute sex. These things are brutish. And that's why the feminists, and I hardly ever agree with the feminists, but the feminists have called for making sure that pornography does not circulate, because quite often the victim, you know, these are sadistic tracts, so that the victim of pornography is very often women, and they understand that. But we, in our laxity, we don't even do what the Supreme Court says we're entitled to do. You know, in a way, it's like certain things having to do with Roe against Wade, you know, the abortion issue. There are certain things that the decision of the Supreme Court allows the states to do in the last trimester that they're not even trying to do. They seem utterly demoralized. You know, they seem incapable of doing something that's absolutely necessary. And similarly, in connection with obscenity, and the Supreme Court has actually contributed to that demoralization of the law enforcement agencies. That's what it amounts to. A combination of two things. The law enforcement agencies began to lose cases. And they were losing cases steadily because of the courts and because of the Supreme Court itself. Well, then the Supreme Court finally said pornography is not protected by the First Amendment. Well, it didn't affect law enforcement. The law enforcement agents had, by that point, not only become demoralized, but they had become infected to some extent by the general notion that it isn't too important. You know, what effect is it having after all? You know, it's just a private thing.
Right. What people do in the privacy of their home, how does that affect anybody else?
Yeah, that's the general line, and of course it does. Anything that affects your soul is going to affect not only you, but everybody else.
Amen.
It has to. And there's no way around that. So that it's simply a very superficial view of things that's allowing us, and both parties are to blame, the Republicans and the Democrats. We should have leaders in both parties who are saying, look, we cannot, and the Supreme Court does not require us to tolerate pornography. But when do you hear these voices crying out? You know, hardly ever.
No, well, there always seem to be much more important things, like, you know, some of these studies that they do on the life habits of the condor. I don't know how much money we spend on the condors today, but everyone that's out in the wilds today has telephone, radio tracking devices on it, so we know where they are. And my goodness, if one doesn't move from one spot in a day, why, it's a major national emergency. But the pollution of our minds, of our children, and the destruction of our families doesn't seem to be too important. We're going to be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. But ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hofker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Outcome-Based Education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that if we are going to recapture America, first of all, we have to have people who understand the miracle of our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, and from whence our freedom comes. Now, there has been an organized effort for many, many years not to teach the Constitution in colleges, not to teach them in high school or grammar school. And so we're going to have to start from fundamentals. We are supporting the people who are setting up the Institutes of the Constitution all across America. What can you do? Why, you can call 410-760-6759. That's 410-760-6759. And get a kit to set up an Institute of the Constitution at your church, in your community, in your home. Get over half a dozen people or a dozen people. There are actually 12 30-minute videos there put together by Dr. John Eidsmo, videos by David Barton. A book tells you how to set up an Institute of the Constitution. It's important that you do this and help to get these set up all across America. They are being set up, and we've just had a couple of classes graduate within this last week. Call them at 410-760-6759. Help us to get the truth out. If you don't do it, who will? And if not you, if not now, when? Because we're losing our freedom. We're losing it very rapidly. Is there a force working behind the scenes intent upon changing America? Well, there's a conference going to be held over the Memorial Day weekend. It's going to be in Santa Clara, and it's known as the Conspiracy Conference. I'm going to be speaking. Jim Mars will be there. People from all across America. Let me suggest, if you're interested in going, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or go to their website, conspiracycon.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Professor David Lowenthal. We're talking about his book, Present Dangers, and really it's so important people to understand what they've done to the meaning of the First Amendment. Before we get to that, let's go to Fred, who's been waiting patiently here from Salinas. Fred, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, back before after the Civil War, they formed the United States of America under the Articles of Confederation, and at that time, for about 10 years there, they had to finally change over and have a constitutional convention. Then the main emphasis for that was a rebellion, the Shays Rebellion. Can you talk about anything about that at all?
Well, was the Shays Rebellion before or after the Constitutional Convention?
It was before the Constitutional Convention.
Well, Dr. Lowenthal, what's the background there?
Well, it's not something that I can really say that much about. I can say something about, I think perhaps to bring this thing up to date for your listeners, one of the things that happened with the Supreme Court after 1950 was to legitimize the existence of enemy groups within the society. And before that time, whether you could have a communist group or a Nazi group or an Aryan Nation group, all of which are openly committed to either overthrowing the government or destroying it one way or the other, why it was taken for granted that the First Amendment did not protect enemies of the Republic. So Shays' Rebellion would be sort of an old example of something that of the same kind that we have to cope with today.
Uh-huh.
Well, what the court did was to extend the notion of individual liberty so that you had a right to call for revolution, to teach it, to preach it, to organize for it. So you could organize a communist party, a Nazi party, and so on, up to the point that you were about to do it, about to overthrow the government. Now, overthrowing the government has always remained a crime. But the question is whether you had a right to lead up to that point. Well, prior to the Supreme Court's pronouncing on these things in the last century, and starting more or less around 1950 or so, well, one by one, what the court did was to legitimize the existence of these enemy parties, these enemies within our ranks who openly defy us and say, we're out to get you, you know, out to destroy you.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Constitution was never meant as a kind of suicide pact. It wasn't meant that way. It was intended to be a cooperative venture on the part of all those who recognize the same fundamental views, the same fundamental human rights. And so if you have a group like Nazis coming around and saying, well, we believe in eliminating Jews, or even a Ku Klux Klan, if they call for eliminating blacks or subduing them, enslaving them, why, these groups are enemy groups. They're not entitled to this kind of freedom. And just to give one example for Fred to think about, the Oklahoma City bombing was done by Timothy McVeigh. Now, Timothy McVeigh had been subject to the teaching, had been part of the organization of something like an Aryan Nation group. And they taught that the federal government is hateful and deserves to be destroyed, and we ought to destroy its buildings. And so when Timothy McVeigh went out and did that, he was acting on a common view of that very group. Now, you would think that that very group should have been suppressed by this point, because, in fact, one of their members went out and did the thing that they preached. Not on your life. They're still out there.
Uh-huh.
They're still preaching that very thing, and protected by the First Amendment. So that these are real examples. Now, you can see how this can easily extend to, I understand that there are certain mosques in our country that are kind of radical mosques, and where the imam or the mullah who is preaching there actually calls for the destruction of Americans. Well, there isn't any right to do that, and only the Supreme Court in its recent phase has extended such a right. Well, today we should realize that it's much too dangerous to live that way. We can't permit enemies in our midst to call for our own destruction.
I know, going all through school, I've been absolutely amazed that little piece of history has just been written right out of history, and
mm-hmm.
It seems to be quite important because it was a classic battle between the bankers and the landowners, you know, mm-hmm. the rich, and it was a class warfare thing.
But you can't have an armed rebellion. If you're going to overcome something, you're going to have to do this through a legal means, and that's why you needed an organized government. On the other hand, you need an organized government to keep from having anarchy, but you have to have moral people if you're going to have a limited government, and if you don't have moral people, you have a tyrannical one. Okay, thanks so much, Fred.
Thank you.
Okay, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And Professor, how can people get copies of your book?
Well, it's real easy, and right now the publisher, Spence Publishing Company out in Dallas, is having a really fine sale. They've reduced the, for your listeners, if they call in and mention your name and the name of your program, why the book, which is called Present Dangers, in its second edition, in a new and better edition, is available for $9 for the book itself. There's some cost for shipping, but it's a 50% off sale. And the number they have to call is this. It's an 888 number, so 888-773-6782.
That's 888-773-6782 for Spence Publishing, and we have a number of their authors on because we think they put out very, very important books, and I'm glad your book is in a second printing. They've had some wonderful books there that never made it into the second printing that I thought then were really classics, and which I really treasure my interviews with the people. Now, you actually have a whole chapter on the sexual revolution, and one place in your book you talk about Mapplethorpe, and here's a man, vulgar. His idea of art is a crucifix in a glass of urine, or some horrible things having to do with sodomy and whips and things of that sort. And this is art financed by the National Endowment of Art with your tax money, and anybody who dares to speak against it obviously is a prude. They're against art, but this certainly it has nothing to do with art. It's simply flaunting freedom to destroy morality. What are your thoughts on Mapplethorpe and his ilk?
Well, they're actually your very thoughts. I was invited to participate in a conference that was on more or less the question was, is there censorship of the arts in the mass media, essentially in television? Is there censorship of the arts? And they had people down there from the networks, and they had heads of museums, and they had all kinds of people from the so-called art world. Much to my amazement, they had utterly no sympathy for the point of view that you've expressed and that I would express and that I did express. What they did was to say, oh, the public is horning in on us. They're compelling us to censor art when they should lay their hands off, and they had no sympathy whatsoever for the reaction of the average man. They seem entitled, in their view, to be supported in this kind of stuff. Well, but you can see that two things have happened at the same time, Dr. Stan. One is a degeneration of morality, but the other is probably an equal degeneration of art. To consider what these people do as art, no matter how competent. You can draw the glass of urine perfectly, you can draw, the human figure perfectly, but you put them together in that kind of thing, and you call that on, you want to support it with public funds, it's outrageous. But much to my own amazement, they simply did not understand the point of view, the moral point of view of the public itself.
And, of course, if somebody wants to paint that, that's their right. But to finance that, and, of course, somebody has to make the decisions. And there are lots of good things and worthwhile and wholesome things. They never get government funding. It's only the corrupt, the vile, the degrading. Well, let's go to Ben calling in from Salinas. Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Dr. Stan. Chasing you around the dial again. My question for your guest is this, and I'm addressing the issue, people 18 and over, the adults, they are vehemently against pornography, and I think that children, pornography is very dangerous, but adults are adults. But these people, especially in the Bible Belt, too, where the porn sites are the most visited on the Internet, but yet they're so vehemently publicly against pornography, but yet they're so vehemently behind George Bush and all the killing of women and children and elderly people in Afghanistan and Iraq. How can they be so much against the sex act and so much for the killing of all these innocent people?
All right, we've got your question. What would your response to be to that, Professor?
Well, that's an interesting question. You see, it isn't opposition to the sex act itself. Animals engage in sexual...
Please let Dr. Professor...
Let me just sort of explain. Animals engage in sexual intercourse, too. If we want human beings to live like animals, to just follow instinct,
why then we would remove from them and take pains to cause to disappear all those moral views and those habits and those emotions that elevate the sex act and connect it with love and devotion. And that's where your problem lies. When you take the sex act off by itself and you encourage it, and you know our magazines are doing that all the time. If you're at a supermarket, you're just leaving, you're at the cash register, you're just surrounded by magazines, all of which speak of the pleasures of sex, of this and that, but of sex. They don't speak of love anymore. The word love has disappeared from their vocabulary. Well, our youngsters take us up on that. You know, if we're going to teach them that sex is the thing, well, then sex will be the thing. It won't be love. It won't be devotion. It won't be all those painstaking things that you have to do in becoming a parent and taking care of your offspring. You're going to be interested in sex, the pleasures of sex. And that's where the problem lies. As to its connection with the killing of older people and all the rest in these countries, why, naturally, nobody wants to do that, and nobody should want to do
Which
that.
Does?
No, please don't interrupt. Let Dr.
Well, I don't believe that that's giving sufficient credit to. Would you say that President Clinton wanted to do the same thing when he bombed the heck out of Yugoslavia?
Yes.
Well, at least you're nonpartisan in the matter.
Ben, let me interrupt here because we're running out of time. I sympathize with your feelings on the war. I agree with you totally.
There is something
evil in the world today.
But thou shalt not kill.
There is something evil in the world
yes,
today.
Sir.
In fact, there's a man named Richard Mayberry who puts out the Early Warning newsletter, and he wrote recently in the September issue last year that after analyzing the First and the Second World Wars, realizing 1 million people a month were dying during the last 2 years of the Second World War, and there were repeated opportunities for peaceful negotiations with both Germany and Japan. Japan tried to surrender 5 times for 7 months, and we wouldn't allow it. He finally came to the conclusion that there was a thing out there that wanted death and destruction.
Sure.
And of course,
we have that today.
We absolutely we do, and you're absolutely
and
right. And if you get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, we covered.
Okay.
Thanks so very much, and I agree with you.
But the danger today is Mr. Bush.
No, it's not Mr. Bush. It's
yes,
the people
it is,
who it's the people who surround
he is
Mr.
The
Bush.
The terrorism people.
No, Ben.
You don't know.
It is not one man. I suggest that you get my video and then you go to the website newamericancentury.org.
I'll do that.
Okay, thanks so much. And of course, everybody wants to say Mr. Bush alone. Now, Mr. Bush cannot be relieved of the responsibility, but it is the people who surround the president who are laying out the plan. He is responsible, however, for what happens. But there is a group who surround him, and anybody who doubts that this small group of 25 men took control of the executive branch of government, you go to their website, newamericancentury.org, or get my March newsletter. But we're getting way off the subject with Professor Lowenthal. But let's go to Alan calling from the primary, Roger calling from Allentown. Did you have a statement or a question?
Yes, thanks, Jens. A question for your guest. I'm guessing it was probably the same 1973 Supreme's ruling that directly addressed the pornography question, as he said, was they threw it back in the lap of community standards, I believe was the phrase they used. But yet haven't they subsequently done things in that same court to undermine those same community standards in restricting porn?
Now let's ask the question that Roger is saying, well, the Supreme Court said it should be community standards that determines pornography, and then of course they seem to have undermined those community standards. Is that correct?
Well, I believe, generally speaking, that it is correct. You see, the Supreme Court complicated the whole question of pornography between the years, more or less, 1950 or so, up through 1973. And even since, they've complicated the thing, so that instead of there being a kind of simple line that everybody can understand, a lot of different things, a lot of different elements. What does the average man think? What are the community standards? How sort of novel and totally foreign to our acceptable standards is the thing. Well, many factors were introduced. Since 1973, the court has gone out on a limb in connection with television and the mass media. It's actually sort of spoken as if there's a right on the part of adults to indecency. Not quite defined in the same way as obscenity, but nevertheless, not that distant from it either. So that there's a right of adults to view indecency on television at certain times of the day and so on. Well, so the court really has complicated what is essentially a straightforward thing, and for a very long time was regarded as not that complicated. And so I think your listener is right, Dr. Stan, that the Supreme Court has itself made life difficult for those who really want a clear ruling on obscenity.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you, Roger, and thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here. And again, if you want to get that book, it's 888-773-6782. And, of course, it is the present dangers. Thank you so very much for being with us.
You're very welcome, Dr. Stan. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 and it went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention a couple of things we carry. One of them, of course, is Miracle 2 soap products, and, well, it's a long way from being an orthopedic surgeon to being a soap salesman, but this is excellent soap, and that's about all I can tell you. A lot of our listeners will give glowing stories of the things that have happened to them when they've used this, but we can't make any medical claims for it. There is a soap, a moisturizing soap, a neutralizer, which some people will take for heartburn or indigestion, and then, of course, there is a basically a lotion and a gel. But, of course, they're good for all sorts of things. If you'd like to get more information, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we'll send you information on the Miracle 2 soap products. You can get an introductory set of all five products at a reduced price. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Miracle 2 soap products. Well, I'll tell you, they're awfully popular with our listeners. And then, of course, we carry the Phonopoly. It's a program that will teach your children and your grandchildren how to read phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. It will give them that opportunity that they need to learn to read correctly because they've been deliberately dumbing down our children. Now, Phonopoly is basically five board games, two bonus games, and we throw in two books that go into the organized plan to dumb down American children. And, of course, most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95 plus shipping. And we hope you'll call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. We've had people 50, 60 years old get this, and not for their children, but for themselves. And I had one fellow call me and tell me he was going to go through it again. He'd learned so much. He'd learned the rules, and you can give us a call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and this is the time when I just want to mention, if you'd like to get a big Berkey, why, of course, they are available through our ministry at Radio Liberty. And, of course, when you buy it through us at $239 or nearly $270, $9, but we sell them for $239. Why, you'll get either a video or a four tape set that we produced. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a Berkey light without the lights, $199. And once again, you pay for the shipping, but we throw in a video or an audio tape that we have produced. So if you'd like either the Big Berkey, which is available in every state but California and Iowa, or the Berkey Light, which is available in every state but Iowa, it's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get the base for your Big Berkey, they're $29. If you want to get extra filters, we have those. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, we have the set of two filters, one filter of the Black Berkey are $48, two of them are $91, four are $173. And once again, if you get them to us, you get a video or a four-tape set. Well, this is the time, of course, we want to remind you that our ministry really is primarily supported by our listeners. And if you're out there across America listening, we hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us pay the bills for what we do and allow us to expand. And we're hoping, as we begin doing shortwave on our evening program, another 2 hours of shortwave, and all the other stations would be pulling us down along with that. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or specifically help us to expand our ministry onto other shortwave and then to other markets, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. If you'd like a free copy of our March newsletter, which will tell us about what the Ben from Salinas was talking about, he wants to blame George Bush for everything. And I'm not saying George Bush doesn't bear responsibility for the invasion of Iraq, and, of course, the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction. And, of course, the wicked Saddam Hussein mysteriously disappears, just like the wicked Osama bin Laden mysteriously disappeared. And we just can't find either one of them. All shucks. Well, if you want to know the truth, why, of course, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and get my March newsletter. It will tell you about the people who surround the president and the little group of 25 men who began plotting back in 1997, the spring of 1997, to bring about this war and station American troops throughout the world. Now, this is not my website we refer to. It's their website. It's up on the web at newamericancentury.org. If you have my newsletter, you can read their website much more easily. And, of course, you can get exactly the information you need to get it. It's on my video, the war in Iraq, the untold story, or the syllabus by the same title. You get all of the information there, or you can get both of those together. But by calling 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But even more important, of course, would be to get my newsletter. We'll send that to you free of charge. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our boys who are overseas. And, of course, bring them home. Bring our boys home from all over the world and stop this madness as we move towards an American empire, because that's what it's really all about. And you don't have to take my word. You read what they say on their website, newamericancentury.org, where they talk about the Pax Americana. You know where that came from? The Pax Romana. And you remember what happened to Rome, and the same thing's going to happen here. Only, I fear, with nuclear weapons. You may see the same destruction in our cities that we wrought in Baghdad. Pray for our boys and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
There's a guy named Dale Cogg, and he wanted to give you some information about a movie that is going to be showing in San Jose about the 9/11 attack.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't have a telephone number.
No, he said just for more information,
okay.
just search
okay.
for the words in it.
Thank you.
Oh,
how come it's off?